Okay, welcome. So good to see everyone as we get ready for Yontiv. Just a couple of points. As we begin, we're literally less than a week away already from Rosh Hashanah. So the goal of this, normally we would do this in shul and we would hand out machzorim. So I don't know how many of you are actually holding a machzor in your hand already. If you do have a machzor, I would encourage you to have one, to get one, open it up. It'll be easier as we go through. I am going to be working on the assumption that many of you do not have, so I'll try to make things as clear as possible, even though normally you would be with the assumption that we'd be following along together. But so if you do have one, go grab your Rosh Hashanah Machzor. I will be using the Art Scroll pages. That's what I have in front of me, and we will follow along as best we can. The goal of this is really very simple. The more that we are involved, taking a few minutes out of our day to work through the machzor, we get familiar with the terms, the themes that come out of the machzor, the better it is. The sages, in giving us this gift of the machzor, have really bestowed upon us the gift of understanding what Rosh Hashanah is. The day itself is, I always find, the most complicated day on the Jewish calendar. For me personally, by far, the most complicated day. And what I mean by that is, every other day, every other holiday, to me at least, is very clear what the attitude, what the feeling, the emotion of the Jew going through the day is supposed to be. Whether or not it's the Yom Kippur experience, which is austere and serious in every way, or Purim and its joy, and the holidays of Pesach and Sukkot, it's clear like what it is that we're doing. I always find Rosh Hashanah to be far and away just complicated because on the one hand, we go to shul and we describe it as a day of judgment, as we'll say, Unisana Tokef, and who will live and who will die, and who by fire, and who by sword, and who by water, who in his time, who before their time. It's serious. It makes a difference. It's a big deal. Except, unlike Yom Kippur, on Rosh Hashanah, after we go through saying that, after we go through the intensity of Musaf, we go home and we have a meal. And we all know what a meal is like. The meal, it's Yontiv. It's family, it's friends, even if it's going to be a little bit more limited this year than in other years. But it's a festive environment, as it should be. And then we go back to shul and it's all seriousness again. And it's a complicated day because of all the different elements that play into Rosh Hashanah more than any other day. Yom Kippur is easy. We know what we're doing. We stay in shul. There's no meal. It's serious from beginning to end. Rosh Hashanah is, you know, a little bit more complicated. But what the sages have given us is the gift of the machzor, in which they give us the insight as to what are the themes, and through the themes of the machzor, we could tap into what we're supposed to be doing. One quick story, just to begin: Reb Aaron of Karlin. Karlin of Chassidim, Reb Arla, was the leader of the Rebbe from the Chassidim, as is well known in the Machzor, where the Chazan of Shachris begins, is with the words Hamelech, right before Yishtabach. Just for though you actually have your Machzor open, I'll give you the exact page where I'm actually referring to. We are on page 262. On the top of the page, the Chazan traditionally begins with the word Hamelech. That's where he starts chanting Hamelech, and on that word Hamelech, referring to the king, he fainted. He was the Chazan for Shachris, and he fainted upon saying the word Hamelech. So his Chassidim quickly rushed to revive him and bring him back to. And when he regained consciousness, they said, "Rebbe, what happened?" See, he said, "I got up there. I started davening, and I said Hamelech, and I was reminded of a passage in the Talmud, a story the Gemara records, a story within a story. The Gemara records the story during the time of the second Beis HaMikdash, the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, when the Romans had laid siege to the city of Yerushalayim, and Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was the great leader of the Jewish people during the siege of the second Beis HaMikdash. And without getting into all the details of the story, he snuck out of the city in his attempt to save whatever he could do right before the destruction. And the Gemara tells the whole story. They pretend that he had died and he was in a coffin. They got him out of the city. When he gets out of the city, he immediately goes to the Roman camp and to its leader, Vespasian. And he says, he greets Vespasian, the Roman general at the time, by saying, basically a language of hail to the king. So Vespasian says to him, you are not allowed to say that because I am indeed not the king. I'm only the general. You're not allowed to refer to me as the king or the emperor of the Roman Empire when I'm not. The actual Roman emperor would have your head. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, yeah, but I know I have a tradition, and he quotes a verse that the city of Yerushalayim is only going to fall to a king. And since you're about to destroy the city, must be you have the status of a king. And at that very moment, a messenger arrives and says, the Caesar has died back in Rome, and you, Vespasian, have been appointed, you know, Caesar. So the story, of course, goes on. It said he grants Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai a few wishes, which he, of course, uses. He saves this city of Yavne and its wise people. But Vespasian then says to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, if you indeed knew that I was king, how come you didn't come earlier? Why are you just showing up now? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, I couldn't, I was stuck. He gives some excuse. So back to our story. But Aaron of Karliner says, I was reminded of that. It's Rosh Hashanah, and I began by saying, HaMelech. And I thought, the king would say to me, if you really recognize me as a king, why are you first coming to me now? Where have you been all year when you've been doing all the other things that you've been doing? Now you come. Now you declare me to be king. Where have you been? So I fainted out of it. I begin with a story. I love Hasidish stories. They are great. They hammer home the point and the ideas. When we say the word HaMelech throughout the Machzor, if there's one word which appears over and over and over again and its themes are so critical, it's that theme. The idea of Hashem as a king, and we are using the stage to coronate him as such. Okay, let's go through the Machzor. What I want to do is highlight a number of different just short passages, ideas, and again, that we should become familiar, and through them address the theme of the Yontif, of the day. Let's start. I'm on page 296. This is the beginning of the Shmoneh Esrei. We're going to say a number of Shmoneh Esreis, of course, over Yontif. It's a very special Shmoneh Esrei in Rosh Hashanah, and it has a number of special insertions. So let's start there. This is a comment that in past years, if you've come to this particular journey through the Machzor class, I always start with this because you have to. It's just the place to start when we talk about the Machzor on Rosh Hashanah. The first major insertion that we do on the Rosh Hashanah davening on page 296. You'll see it right when we begin the Shmoneh Esrei in the bold. The line, Zachreinu L'chaim, Zachreinu L'chaim, Melech Chafetz B'chaim. I'm singing for those of you who are not going to be able to come to shul. We should hear the tunes of Rosh Hashanah to reverberate through your computer into your home. What are we saying? What are these words? Zachreinu l'chaim. Remember us for life. Beautiful. Remember us for life. We yearn, of course, what an obvious prayer. Melech chafetz b'chaim. O king who desires life. And again, here you have the idea. First of all, we refer to Hashem, of course, as our king. And a king who desires life. Ha-chafetz b'chaim. You don't want us to die. You don't want us to be sick. You want us to be alive and well and healthy. So we address Hashem that way. Remember us for life, O King, who only yearns and wants us to have life. V'kasvenu b'sefer achayim. And write us into the book of life. Of course, a reference to the famous Gemara that there are three books that are opened before Hashem on Rosh Hashanah. Book of life and the book of death. And we want to be inscribed in the book of life. Now, if we would have stopped right there without saying the last phrase, it would be a beautiful phrase unto itself. Remember us for life, O King who desires life, and write us into the book of life. It's there. It's a standalone. It's a wonderful tefillah. Except we add one phrase. L'ma'ancha Elokim Chayim. For your sake, O living God. What does that phrase change? It not just changes. It doesn't just add. It changes the entire prayer. The prayer which began, remember us for life, inscribe us for life, that would be a prayer of, I got a lot of things I want to accomplish. I got a lot of things I want to do. I have to. We could all list all the things if we were to say a reason. Why do we want to live? We have lots of reasons. But on Rosh Hashanah, when we ask Hashem for life, we do not conclude with all of our personal reasons why we want life. We say, for your sake. I need life for your sake. Because if you grant me life, I will bring more godliness into this world. If you grant me life, I will bring more goodness, more light, more help, more kindness, more Torah, more mitzvos. Not for me. If we were to stand before Hashem on Rosh Hashanah and say, I need life because there are things I want to do, who amongst us would have legs to stand upon to say, I deserve this? Who can claim that? We don't ask for that. We say on Rosh Hashanah with the clarity that we have on this day, I need life for you. For you, for your sake, you give me life, you'll see I'll pay dividends back. I'm going to bring all that goodness and godliness into this world. That a Jew can ask for on Rosh Hashanah. That we all have the ability to do, and that's the way that we express that. It's one of the most beautiful tefillos of all of Rosh Hashanah. Zachreinu l'chaim lema'ancha. For your sake, grants me life. Flip the page to page 298. We have the second insertion that we're familiar with. On the top of the page, in bold, Micha Mocha Avrachamim. Who is like you, O merciful Father? Zocher Yitzurav L'chaim Berachamim. Who always remembers his creations for life. And again, it sounds like a very similar tefillah in which we ask Hashem to remember us for life. Except there's a very significant difference. Two very significant differences, really, between the first phrase that we just studied and this particular phrase. The first phrase, Zachreinu l'chaim, what way did we use our reference to Hashem? In what context? What was the parable, let's say, relationship is a better word. What type of relationship do we refer to Hashem in that first phrase of Zachreinu l'chaim? Melech chafetz b'chaim. We refer to him as our king. In this second phrase, it's Micha Mocha, who is like you? Av harachamim, merciful Father. And here again, in the beginning of our Shemoneh Esrei, our sages have highlighted and tuned us into the dual relationship that we have as we stand before Hashem on Rosh Hashanah. On the one hand, he's a melech. He's a king. What does that make us if he's a king? It makes us into avadav, his servants, his loyal citizens of his, the constituents of his palace, so to speak, of his world. And you're the king. And we just want to be part of that. And then the very next line that we add in, we refer to him as an Abba, as a Tati, as a father. That is a totally different relationship. That's not standing before the king in awe and in reverence as a loyal subject in the kingdom. It's my Tati. I'm the prince. I'm the little baby running around the palace playing on the king's lap. You know, if you could imagine a real, you know, the king as a king also has children and grandchildren playing around and taking the crown off of his head and making a mess in the palace. You're the Avarachanim. And these two ideas come up again and again and again, over and over again throughout the davening on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, the dual relationship, Avinu Malkeinu. Of course, in its most famous manifestation, Avinu Malkeinu. Avinu, our father, Malkeinu, our king. Interestingly, in that phrase, which one comes first? Which word do we, which relationship? It's Avinu, you're my father, Malkeinu, and my king. And here in the Shemoneh Esrei, the first reference that we have is to Hashem being a melech, being a king, and then we add our Av HaRachamim, our merciful God. Okay, that is another theme that comes up all the time that we have to address. Continuing on page 298, there is a series of five paragraphs really, that are added to the Shemoneh Esrei special for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Beginning with the phrase Uvechein, you'll see that normally the third bracha of the Shemoneh Esrei is Atah Kadosh V'Shimcha Kadosh. Ukdoshim B'chol Yom Yaluluch HaSeleh. Then we conclude Baruch Atah Hashem HaKel HaKadosh. And here, that bracha is at the very bottom of the page. But in between, we insert these additional four or five paragraphs. And I just want to highlight one or two comments on them. Number one is they begin with the word uvechein, and so too. You see that word right on the, it's in the bold, uvechein. It appears three consecutive times, uvechein, and so too. Then we ask for things. Let's just take a look at what exactly we asked, and I want to go back to that word for a moment. Uvechein tein pachtecha Hashem Elokeinu al kol ma'asecha. I hope everybody sees where I'd like to, if you can, I don't know if you could even see where I'm pointing to, but I'm just, v'chein, right there, the second paragraph on page 298. And so too, Hashem, we ask, instill your awe upon all of your works, and a masecha, and your dread upon all that you have created. Now, the word awe and dread basically means fear, reverence. You know, those are the words. And we're asking, Hashem, we want you to instill them upon all of your acts and your dread upon all that you have created. Let everything that you have created come and prostrate themselves, bow down before you, and let us become a single society to do your will. What is most unique, again, if we were live, I would throw it out as a question and we would discuss this, but unfortunately we're over Zoom. There's one thing that always jumps out in this paragraph. And I would phrase it as a question first. Is the theme of the day of Rosh Hashanah, I would say, three choices. Is the theme of the day about each one of us as individuals? Is it about us as a nation? Or is it about the world? If I were to start with a question, as we go through Rosh Hashanah, in our minds, are we focused on, I have my own needs and my family's need. I'm worried about me. And it's a day about me? Is it a day about the Jewish people? Or is it a day about the world as a whole? And I think most of us, if we were just to sort of, as a gut reaction, would have assumed it's more about the Jewish people. That's generally what we do as Jews on our Yom Tovim. It's unique to the relationship between the Jewish people and Hashem. And this opening paragraph is another very central theme to the entire Machzor of Rosh Hashanah. There's nothing about the Jew in this paragraph at all. It's actually a universal paragraph in which we yearn that Hashem, your presence, the awe and reverence should be upon everyone. Kol ma'asecha, everything that you created, everything that you made in this world, everybody should recognize who you are and become a single bundle, a single group in serving you according to your will. And that is such a unique aspect of Rosh Hashanah that we are not davening, not only are we not davening for ourselves personally, not only are we not davening only for the Jewish people, we're davening that the entire world should come and recognize Hashem for what you are. Right now, it's just us alone. We're the only ones doing it. The Jewish people, we're it. And we're yearning that it should be expanded, that everybody should see. That doesn't mean that we lose our status as a Mamleches Kohanim, as the nation of priests for the entire world, but we want everybody to recognize that. It's not just about us. We want everybody, the whole world, to come and recognize what it is that you are intrinsically. Now, then the next paragraph says, after we have this universal tefillah, we want this for everyone. Uvechein, the second Uvechein says, Tein kavod Hashem liyamecha. Grant your people special honor, because we are your chariot. We are the ones who are going to bring your name out into the world. So we need pischon peh. We need the ability to speak. We need the ability to be able to eloquently present that what you really represent. It's the most painful thing for a Jew should be not just the Jewish suffering, but the fact that Hashem's honor, that Hashem's presence in the world is not what it should be. There's one phrase in the second paragraph I want to highlight, the end of the first line of the second Uvechein, V'tikva tova lidor shecha, good hope to those who seek you. That word, lidor shecha, is going to come up a lot through the Machzor. We're going to highlight a couple of places as we go along. It means to seek Hashem out. That word to be doresh means I'm looking for something. And when it comes to finding Hashem in this world, a Jew has to be a doresh, has to be one who is seeking, who is looking to find Hashem in this world. And so we say, give us good hope for those who are seeking you out. I just want to say one word on the word uvechein. This word, the word uvechein, many of the commentators point out, is borrowed from another place in Tanakh. I'll give you a hint. It comes up in Megillas Esther. Uvechein. Someone says the word uvechein. I'll give you another hint. It's actually Esther herself. Where does Esther say the word uvechein? Esther says the word uvechein when Mordechai successfully convinces her to go speak to the king. Mordechai says, you have to go to Achashverosh. She says, I can't. I'm putting my life on the line. I haven't been called in 30 days. It's not the right time. And he says, it is the right time. You have to do it now. And whatever's going to happen is going to happen. You have to do it. And she says, okay, uvechein. navo el ha-melech asher lo chadas. Okay, she says, I'm going to go to the king, not according to the rules. I'm taking my life in my hands, but this is what's going to be. And so Chazal, the sages, borrowed that language as we approach the king. Without the credentials, without the ability on our own merits to be able to do so. But the time is now. Today is the coronation of the king. We're going to do so. We're going to stand before the king and proclaim him king, even though we might not have on an individual level that which we need, but it's something that we're going to need to do, and it's something that we are going to do as we stand before the king in this moment. Okay, let's go on to some other ideas. Let's just flip one more page, page 300. Just to follow the theme that we began addressing of the universal element of Rosh Hashanah, the concept of us davening on behalf and for everyone, not just on their behalf, but we want everyone to recognize Hashem as the creator. In the bottom paragraph of page 300 is a paragraph, we'll say this very paragraph many times. Each Shmona Esrei has this paragraph, and it's a beautiful paragraph. Elokeinu Elokei Avoseinu, O God of the God of our forefathers, which, by the way, I just have to mention, the reason why we always mention our forefathers, Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, is because, just like what I just said, like, who has the audacity to stand before Hashem? We do, because we're standing as grandchildren of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. I have the ability to stand and say, I can stand before Hashem. I can ask for what I need because I'm an Einikel. I'm a grandson. Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, those are my fathers. And therefore, descended through them, we have the ability. So standing on their shoulders, that's why we always reference in our tefillah, the Elokei Avoseinu. Listen to just two, three lines of this paragraph. Meloch al kol ha'olam kulo bechvodecha. Reign over the entire universe in your glory. That's again following that theme of this universal idea of yearning to see Hashem rule over the entire universe. V'inase al kol ha'aretz bikarecha. Be exalted over the whole world in your splendor. V'hofa v'hadar ge'on uzechan. Reveal yourself in the majestic grandeur of your strength over all the inhabitants. What does it mean to reveal yourself? This is again an idea, a very important theme. Hashem, in a way, is hidden. He's hidden both in the perspective that right now we're living in galus, we're living in exile, and Hashem's presence is not revealed in the world. And the whole world, the world olam, he'elam, means to be hidden. Hashem hid his presence in the world. And our yearning on Rosh Hashanah is reveal it. Let us see that presence. Let it be part of the world where we don't have to be a doresh always. It's there. And then what one of my favorite lines of the entire Machzor, Vayeda kol pa'ul ki ata pa'alto. Let it become known that everything that has been made should know that you are its maker. V'yavin kol yitzur, and let everything that has been shaped, been molded, understand, or been made, and know that you were its maker that shaped it. And v'yomar kol asher neshama be'apo, and let everything that has breath in its nostrils say, Hashem Elokei Yisrael Melech, Hashem, the God of the Jewish people, is the King. U'malchuso b'kol mashallah. And he rules over everything. And the reason why I find this line so beautiful, so powerful, and such a central theme is it combines many things. Number one, it's a yearning that everything that you made should recognize you as the maker. There's a certain, I don't want to say, it's like a painful irony that not only do people not recognize Hashem as the creator, but you made them, those who don't believe in you, you created them, you gave them life, and they're denying you. It's not just like a person who denies a certain ability or power. You made them, and they deny you. So v'yeda kol po'ul, everything that you made, we want them to recognize that you made them. Everything that you formed, let them, everything that has breath in their nostrils should declare. And then this is where it comes back. Hashem, the God of the Jewish people, is the king. And in that line, to me, just summarizes this. Even though we have this universal yearning, what do we want the whole universe to scream? The God of the Jewish people, Elokei Yisrael, is the Melech. We've recognized this the whole time. We have been blessed with the gift of being descended from Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov to bring this message out. And this combines that universal message with when they recognize it, and they should recognize you as the Elokei Yisrael, as the God of the Jewish people whose reign is over everything. Okay. So much to discuss, but we could literally spend hours on the Mafzer, and we're not going to, at least not tonight. Let's flip to page 328. 328 takes us already to the repetition. Now, I wanted to at least spend a little bit of time on some of the paragraphs that we're going to be skipping in Shul this year. We unfortunately, as you all know, have to really limit the amount of time that we can spend, both to limit the time together. This is one of the more beautiful ones that we will not be saying. Some of the minyanim have a little bit more time than others. Might say just the first and last paragraph, but the whole thing we are not going to do. And this is on page 328, what's known as Hashem Melech, Hashem Moloch, Hashem Yimloch Li'olam Va'ed. Now, that refrain, which we say every single paragraph, Hashem Melech is Hashem reigned in the past, Hashem Moloch, Hashem is king now in the present, and Hashem Yimloch, Hashem will reign in the future. So that idea of past, present, and future is this recognition and declaration of Hashem as our king, always has reigned, does reign, will reign, always. I think I said it back. Melech is in the present. Hashem is present now. Moloch is in the past. And Yimloch is in the future. So what I just want to highlight for a moment is as we look at the actual poetry, these piyutim, as they are referred to as poetry, that was written over the centuries that the Jewish people have adopted and have said, let's just take a look at that. We'll read the first two together. Look at the, it goes by the Aleph Beis. I'm going to read the English just. The Jews with a powerful fear of God call powerfully, and we say, what do we call? Hashem Melech. The angels created from flashing fire, they bless aloud. What do they say? Hashem has reigned. And then the spiritually mighty, which could be a reference both to the Jews and to the angels, call strongly. What do they say? Hashem Yimloch Li'olam Va'ed. So what is going on in this poetry? We have a line describing the Jew declaring Hashem king, a line describing the angels as Hashem king, and then together we declare Hashem has reigned forever. Look at the next paragraph, you do the same thing again, and from the letter Dalet. The flaming, fiery angels speak aloud, and what do they say? Hashem reigned, Hashem is king now. Resounding Jewish companies, what do they say? They say Hashem has reigned in the past, angelic companies and chayos gather together, and back and forth the poetry describes the angels and the Jews. That is a very symbolic poetry that we describe. What are we doing with this line? We are equating the ability to declare Hashem king, literally from one line to the next, back and forth the entire way through. The angels do it, and we do it. And that is the statement of, in this world, we are going to fulfill what nobody else can do. No other creature in the universe can do what we do on Rosh Hashanah. The angels in heaven can declare Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh. They see with clarity because they're angelic beings. So they understand there's a creator, here's the Ribono Shel Olam, there's the world of human beings and all of their foibles and their frailties and their shortcomings. One would think, how is it possible for a human being like us, born of mother, gonna die and be buried back in the world, in the ground, a person who, with all of our drives and desires, who needs to use the bathroom, who has to eat, what right can a human being proclaim Hashem king in the same way as an angel? We're not on the same playing field. Doesn't work. And yet, we do. That is the whole concept of Kedusha, of Nikadesh Shimcha Ba'olam. We want you to be sanctified in this world, Kishem Shemakdishim Oso, in the same way that they sanctify you, Bishmei Marom, in the heavens above. We are going to say Kadosh, 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 like they do in heaven. We take that for granted, because we say it every davening, we say Kedusha. Do you know what that means for a human being to praise Hashem in the same way as an angel does? We don't have that same perception. But this piyut highlights, this poetry highlights on Rosh Hashanah particularly, and the way that the piyut just weaves one line to another. The angels say, the Jews say, the angels say, the Jews say, Hashem Melech, Hashem Malach, Hashem Yimloch Yolam Vayed. We literally stand like angels with the ability to do so. And I just to finish that thought, the angels can praise Hashem with the ability, the clarity that they see of what's going on in the universe. The animal kingdom also praises Hashem, as many statements from the sages describe, simply by their being, not because of their free choice, simply because the animal kingdom, in doing what it does, is a praise of Hashem. But only the human being has the ability to choose to do so, to say, I'm going to choose how to see the world around me. I'm going to choose to see Hashem's presence in this world and declare Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh. I'm choosing to do that literally like an angel, and it's something that we should all have in mind. Whether I encourage everybody to say these beautiful poems, whether you want to cut out a few minutes if you're in shul to do so, or if you're davening at home, they express that idea that we are literally like angels. And again, this goes back to that first statement that I made of, I find the day complicated, because what do we do after we declare Hashem King? We then have a meal, which is a very human thing to do. And that's exactly the point. We humans who need to eat, and who Hashem says, celebrate with me on the day you coronate me, have a meal, we are going to be like an angel. I'm going to go from the morning where I'm like an angel declaring your kingdom, and I'm going to be a human and I'm going to eat, and it's as I eat that I say, it doesn't matter that I'm a human, I'm declaring you king over the whole universe, just like the angels do. It's a very special moment of Rosh Hashanah to be able to do so. We do so in different ways all year round, particularly, obviously, on Rosh Hashanah. I just wanted to highlight that. That is what I wanted to share from Shacharis, the morning service. Let us flip to page 434. We're going to go to Musaf. Really right before Musaf, we're going to blow shofar. I want to make just one comment on shofar blowing. On page 434, if you have your machzor, there are a series of verses that we read together with the shofar blower before he actually blows the shofar. Just want to highlight one. You'll see Min HaMetzar, from the straits that I call out to God, a number of different phrases. I want to focus on the fifth verse. Third from the bottom, Sas Anochi al Imrasecha. I rejoice over your word, Kimotse Shalol Rav, like one who finds abundant spoils. I rejoice over your word. What's the word that we're referring to? This is from David HaMelech, the psalmist in Sefer Tehillim. What's David HaMelech rejoicing over? Your word. What does the word refer to? Obviously, that refers to the Torah itself. David HaMelech says, I rejoice over your Torah, like one who finds a great treasure. And of course, David in his poetry takes something that, if you came across such a treasure, the joy that you would have, the excitement, look what I found, these riches, these pearls. David HaMelech says in Tehillim, every time I have the ability to learn your Torah, I rejoice like I just found a treasure. It's like, ah, it's geschmack. The taste, it's such a pleasure to be able to study your Torah and to fulfill your mitzvahs. And I just like to highlight that one pasuk before we blow shofar, which is the coronation of Hashem as King of the universe. Amongst the verses that we say is the appreciation and the joy that King David himself felt for the ability to learn Torah, like, I found a treasure. I have everything that I need, and there's nothing more joyous and glamorous than that. Flipping ahead to page 454, we're going to work through a little bit of Musaf. Musaf, the structure, of course, is comprised of three major sections. I hope I'm not moving too fast, but there's just so much to cover, and I want to try to get as many ideas and themes in as we can in the time that we have. The first major theme of Musaf is, of course, Malchiot. You'll see that in the middle of your page on page 454, 455. Kingship. And the way that we express the kingship is through a series of verses. We're going to express 10 different verses in addition to the other prayers that we have in this particular section. And the opening is the most common to us, familiar to us, Aleinu. Aleinu l'shabeach la'adon hakol finds itself in the middle of Musaf. And for those of you who, as you're davening Musaf Shemoneh Esrei, and it's getting very long, and you start saying Aleinu, you're like, oh, I'm done, it's the end of davening. And then you realize, no, it's not Aleinu at the end of davening, it's the middle of Musaf, you're still only halfway there. It's a common misconception. They're like, oh, Aleinu, they took it and they put it into Musaf. It's the opposite. It's from Musaf, and it's so important that the sages said you have to conclude every tefillah, every davening has to end with Aleinu. That's how important it is. Unfortunately, as we all know, that which we do regularly and all the time, familiar, it becomes very familiar to us, and we sometimes lose its significance of Aleinu. So I say that just to highlight, you know, I would not be the first rabbi to get up and plead with a congregation to spend more than 2.6 seconds on Aleinu at the end of davening. It's amazing how fast everybody can say Aleinu at the end of davening. We're so familiar with it, it just flies right through. It is so important. It's Musaf on Rosh Hashanah. So when you have a chance to say this, to spend an extra couple of seconds on working through the words. I just want to highlight one phrase or line really within the paragraph of Aleinu, which again begins with Aleinu l'shabeach. It is our duty to praise Adon Hakol, the master of all. And that again highlights this dual nature of Rosh Hashanah. On the one hand, there's a universal element in which, again, we yearn for Hashem to be Melech al Kol Ha'olam, to be the king of the entire universe. And yet we note, Aleinu l'shabeach, but it's on us. We are responsible. We have to feel that responsibility. We're the only ones who know it right now. And even though we yearn for it to become known, but at the end of the day, who's doing it? How many people in the entire universe are standing in a shul, or this year in their own homes, wherever it may be? How many people have a Rosh Hashanah machzor in their hands declaring Hashem to be the king of the universe? How many? The whole world. It's an infinitesimal, it's a tiny percentage. And we are privileged. What a blessing to be counted amongst such a small amount of the entire universe actually declaring Hashem King. Aleinu l'sha. It's upon us to be able to do so. And then the paragraph is a blessing. Shelo samanu kemishpachot ta'adama. You did not make us like all the other nations. You have given us the ability, our chelik, our portion is va'anachnu korim u'mishtachavim u'modin, the ability to bend our knee and to bow and acknowledge u'modim lifnei melech malchei amlochem, that you are the creator, ein o, there is nothing else in the world beside you. You are everything, we say to Hashem. And we quote the pasuk, v'yadata yom ha'shivosa l'vavecha, you need to know and take it to heart. On that phrase, the v'yadata yom v'hashivosa el levavecha, you have to know something and take it. What's the difference between knowing something and taking it to heart? So, as we all know, we know lots of things. We people, we know lots of things. We know things that we should be doing. We know things that we shouldn't be doing. It doesn't make a difference that we know it. We do the things that we shouldn't do, and we don't do the things that we should do. Classic examples, I use them all the time. I don't even, you know, exercise, eating healthy, whatever. Everybody has our vices that we know what we should or shouldn't be doing, but, you know, what we know and what we do. So the pasuk says, v'yadata hayom, you need to know it, v'hashivosa el levavecha, take it to heart, too, as well. The second paragraph, Alkein, then describes our hope. What is our hope? To see evil removed, idolatry removed from the world. So we know this now, but we want to see all the evil we need. It needs to be rid of. L'sakein olam tikkun olam l'bimalchu shaddai. This phrase, l'sakein, the third line of that second paragraph on the bottom of the page, Alkein Agav, the third line says, l'sakein olam b'malchu shaddai, to perfect the universe through your reign, through your kingdom. And I would like to point out as well, the word tikkun olam has become a very, very famous phrase. Tikkun olam means to perfect the world. It's something that we believe in very strongly. But the source of that phrase, tikkun olam, has a second half of the phrase. It's not just tikkun olam, it's tikkun olam b'malchut shakai, with your kingdom. Perfect the world with the recognition of your kingdom in the world. That's where we yearn for the perfection of the world and the removal of all evil as well. We will then say a series of of verses describing kingship throughout the psukim from the Navi, psukim from Ketuvim, and then concluding, of course, on the bottom of page 456 with the blessing of Hashem as king, which we already discussed earlier, most of the text of that. Page 458, just moving along in our Machzor. Page 458 is the second section of the Rosh Hashanah Musaf, which is known as Zichronot, remembrance. Remembrance starts in the following, in the middle of page 458, 459. Atot zocher ma'aseh olam. You remember the deeds done in the universe. Upoked kol yitzure kedem. And recall all of the creatures fashioned, not just now, that exists now, everything that's ever been existed, lefanecha niglu kol ta'alumot. In front of you, all hidden things are revealed. Vehamon nistarot mibereshis. And the multitude of mysteries since beginning of creation, ki ein shikcha lifnei kisei kivodecha. There's nothing that's forgotten before your throne. This is the, you know, out of all the frightening paragraphs that we, this is the most. Nothing is forgotten. You know, I don't know how Jews of 100 years ago, 200 years ago, visualized what it means when we say that there's no forgetting before Hashem, that Hashem sees everything. The idea that after we finish in this world, after 120 years, our life will be played before Hashem and will be reviewed. I don't know how they visualize that, but I could tell you in our day and age, it's easy. It's as if our entire world is, life is being recorded, but not just that our life is being recorded, our thought processes are being recorded. Everything we ever said, did, is being recorded. And after 120 years, we're going to stand at the heavenly court. It's going to, a movie is going to play. We probably will not be given a bag of popcorn. And we're going to watch every single thing throughout our life. There are those who say that in itself is the greatest punishment that we would ever have to experience in life, when we just simply watch what was done and have to explain, well, why did you say that? Why did you do this? Why did you behave like that? You did it twice already, a third time, how many times? And we have to watch ourselves on everything that we do. This is the paragraph that describes it. As we declare Hashem king, we say, you're not just a king like a human being, king that we can somehow bribe or hope he didn't see or catch. There's nothing that gets past you. There's nothing that's forgotten. Everything is there. Everything is reviewed. And so it's on this day, Rosh Hashanah is the day that we declare Hashem king. It's the day that he sits in judgment. As we declare him king, it's the day that the world was created. Man was created on this day. So man as a whole, and man as you and I, as individuals, are looked at of what's doing, how are things going, what should be the plan for the coming year based on what you did over the past year. There's a reckoning of where things are. And that language, therefore, is a very, very powerful language. I always find you remember everything and everything comes before you. Therefore, this is the beginning of the second paragraph, it's the final paragraph on page 458. Ve'al hamedinot bo'ye amer. Therefore, on entire countries, it is said, which ones are destined for sword, which ones are destined for peace, which ones for hunger, and which ones for abundance. And each creature, each individual is also remembered. Milo nifkad kayo mazeh. Who is not recalled on this day? For the remembrance of everything comes before you, everyone's deed and mission. All of our deeds and our mission, I want to get back to that phrase in a moment, for all the accomplishments of man's activity, his thoughts, his schemes, the motives, they all come before you. You know, in our human interaction, we could do an action, and the person with whom we interacted has no idea what our true motive was. They don't know whether or not we were doing something for a selfish reason, whether or not we were doing something for an altruistic reason. We have no idea. All they see is what we did. But it doesn't work their way in the heavenly throne. They know our motives too, and we include that in the Machzor. The phrase that everyone's deed and mission is also brought before. I shared a thought on Shabbos. I'll just share it again. The Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says that at the end of our days, we'll stand before Hashem to give a din v'cheshbon, to give a judgment and a reckoning. Two different words, judgment and reckoning. And the Vilna Gaon commented, what does it mean that we do two things at the end of days, which is really what's happening on every year in Rosh Hashanah as well? A din, a judgment, is on the things that we did or didn't do, the things that we did right, the things that we did wrong. We have to make there's a judgment on that. But there's another aspect which is called cheshbon, din v'cheshbon. Cheshbon is a reckoning. And that, the Vilna Gaon explained, is where they show us in the heavenly court what we could have been, what we should have been, what we could have accomplished, all of the things. And this doesn't mean to say they show us a picture of the Chafetz Chaim or some great... No. What we could have been done. And in heaven they say... Yeah. We know, we're not talking about the Chava. We're talking about you, what you could have been. Yeah, they say. We know the parents that you had. Yeah. We know which fourth grade teacher you had and how he was mean and group. Yeah. We know the high school did a disastrous job. We know. We know which community we lived in. We know what kind of job you had. We know all of that. And with all of that, these are the skills we gave you, these are the tools, these are the resources, these are the traits, these are the strengths, this is what you could have done if you would have focused. Except none of us focus, we get distracted by life and all sorts of things. And the cheshbon, the reckoning that we're going to have, is what really could have been with all the things that we dealt with in life, but what we could have accomplished, the book we could have written, so to speak. The chapters we could have studied, the acts of kindness we could have done, the tzedakah we could have given, not like if we were someone else, in our own lives. And that's what we say in this phrase, ma'aseh ish ufkudoso. What comes before you on Rosh Hashanah? Everyone's deed and their mission. Their particular individual mission that Hashem has set out for each and every one of us, with the tools and the situation in life that each one of us, we all have a mission. And all of that is brought before Hashem on this day, new. How are things going? Okay, there's a lot to say in that, but it's heavy stuff. Let's move on. 478, another one of the paragraphs that we will likely not be saying this year. One of the beautiful piutim on page 478. A word about this. We're almost done. This poetry describes Melech Elyon. You'll see that in the beginning of every single line. O Supreme King. And then we have some beautiful lines in the middle. Who dwells on high, who is powerful, the one with power to carry out, who decrees and execute, reveals the deepest mysteries. Every line begins with Melech Elyon. La'adei ad yimloch. Forever shall he reign. At the end of this beautiful paragraph, we then switch. Normally the Aron is open for that, and then we close it, and then we have two paragraphs in which we say in the middle of page 480, Melech Evyon, O destitute king, lowercase k, human king, who withers and descends to the grave, fatigued. How long is he going to reign for? Melech Evyon, destitute king, slumber, shroud, and void, in which we describe the contrast between the King of Kings with a capital K, Hashem himself, with the human king and the human being, and the contrast between, you know, when we say la'adei ad yimloch, the eternity. Eternity is a long time. You, Hashem, reign forever. We are here for such a small amount of time, such a sliver in the scheme of things that we all have in this world. And we highlight that to take advantage, to remind us of what it is that we need to accomplish. That leads us into Nisan HaTokef, the bottom of page 480, famous paragraph in which we relate the power of the day's holiness, in which we describe the things that we were talking about. It's on this day that Hashem judge, everything passes before you, and the great shofar will be sounded, the angels tremble, terror will seize them as they say it's the day of judgment. Mankind will pass before you like a member of the flock. As we're familiar, we read this together every year. With the second paragraph on page 482, Berosh Hashanah Yikasevun, and Rosh Hashanah will be inscribed, and Yom Kippur it will be sealed. How many will be born? How many will pass on? Who will live and who will die? Who in his time? Who is not time? We're familiar with that. There's just one line in all of this that I want to highlight. We actually do have a chance to spend a lot of time on these paragraphs in shul during the year regularly. On the very top of page 482, when the beginning of this paragraph describes the awesomeness of the day, how the Book of Chronicles is opened up, so to speak, before Hashem, and it reads itself, and the signature of every person is on it. That phrase always strikes me. Meaning to say, in our world that we live in our interactions with other human beings, whenever something happens, there's always two sides. I deal with this all the time. You know, someone comes in with a complaint. There's always two sides to the story. Okay, you're telling me like this. What does the other side have to say? How did they view it? In the heavenly ledger, there's no second side. This is what happened. They have access to our thought process and our deeds. And the way that that's described is, your signature, my signature, our signature is there. It's like we signed it ourselves, testifying to it. So the book just reads itself, and we signed it. We this is what we've done, and that's what it is that we are judged on. This paragraph, of course, concludes tshuva, tefillah, utzdaka, with tshuva, with prayer, with our tzedakah. We could remove the decree, and this just is going to circle us back to the opening thing that we spoke about, the phrase of lima'ancha. We want to live for you. We say to Hashem, on this day that we're proclaiming you king, on the day that we're yearning for the whole world to proclaim you as a king, on the day that is also a day of judgment, when we say, like, listen, what are we going to say? We can't argue. We signed all the documents. Our actions speak for themselves. They are what they are. But you know what? Today, with the clarity that I see, lima'ancha Elokim, for your sake, give me more life. I want to bring more holiness, more godliness, more goodness to the world for your sake. And that we always have the ability to do, no matter what's gone on in the past, we always have the ability, and that's the gift of the day, to be able to say, lima'ancha, for your sake, I want more. I have more that I need to be able to do, and more that I want to be able to accomplish. Okay, three more short comments, short ones, and I will let you go. Page 490. Another one of the paragraphs which will likely be skipped in most of the minyanim. V'chol ma'aminim. Beautiful paragraph, the piyut of v'chol ma'aminim. Everybody believes, and then we list, based on the Aleph Beis, all of the different traits and things that we believe. We all believe that you are the God of faithfulness. We believe that you test and examine the hidden archives. We believe that you examine thoughts, you redeem. We believe that you are the deliverer, you are the sole judge, and all of the various things. I just want to highlight one or two. Towards the bottom of the page, the letter tet. We believe that you are hatov. You are he who is good. Umeitiv laroim v'latovim. And you do good for both the wicked and the good. A very important phrase. When we say, it's not just that you are the essence of good, and you do good for both those who are tovim and for those who are rishayim. Your goodness extends to everyone. V'chol ma'aminim, the very next line, shu tov lakol. You are good to all. One other phrase that I want to highlight is the letter Samach. If you flip the page to page 492, four lines down, V'chol ma'aminim shuhu notzer chesed, that you preserve kindness. Hasovel, you are patient. Savlanut, you have to have patience. Like Hashem, you are the patient one. U'ma'alim ayin misoiririm. And you avert your eye from those who rebel against you. We have this idea, you know, a parent sometimes needs to know when not to look. You know, don't look. Let the kids, you know, if a parent would hover over a kid and watch their every move, the kids would go crazy. As we see from, what do they call them today? Helicopter parents. It's like too much. You know, sometimes just let them play in the other room and do their thing. You don't have to see every single thing wrong that a kid does. You know, none of us would like it if at work a boss was literally standing over our shoulder and every single thing, we don't function well that way. So we say in V'chol ma'aminim that Hashem is sovel, he has patience, and he hides himself, so to speak, from those who rebel against him. Sometimes he is so patient, it's as if he won't see that which we do wrong. Many other beautiful phrase. Haposeach shar, who opens up the gate to those who knock with tefillah, the dovke b'tshuva, he comes and he sees. Okay, page 496, just two more. Two more quick comments on page 496. Really, 494. On the bottom of 494 is an additional beautiful poem, V'yeh'esoyu kol ha'avadach, in which we yearn that everybody should come to serve you, to recognize you as the king. On the second line there, I'm sorry, page 494, I'm four lines from the bottom of the page. V'yagidu v'oyim tzidkecha, they will declare your righteousness even in the far-flung lands. V'yidreshucha amim lo yidu'ucha. And all those people who do not know you will seek you out. And again, that language, we highlighted it before, v'yidreshucha, to be a dorish, to seek out. We yearn that all the nations will seek you out, even those who do not know you. Those who are far away will come. And we conclude this paragraph on 496 on the top, v'yitznu lecha keser melucha. They will all present you with the crown of kingship. Let me just conclude with one last comment on page 534. The very, very end of the davening, we have the tefillah of Hayom, Hayom ta'amtzenu, bottom of 532, top of 534, at the end of the Musaf tefillah, the Chazan, usually most Chazanim that I'm going to sing this with great joy as we've concluded the day, Hayom ta'amtzenu, today give us strength. Hayom tivarcheinu, today bless us. Hayom tigadleinu, make us great today. And then the one on the top of page 534 that I want to highlight as we conclude, Hayom tidrashenu litova, today seek us out for good. And that word doresh, which we've said so many times, in which we say, we want to seek you out. We want the nations of the world to seek you out, to be doresh, to look for you. We conclude Musaf with saying, Tashem, now you seek us out for good. Find all the good in us that we've done, all the kindness, all the tzedakah, all the davening, all the learning. You seek us out for good and bless us with a good year based on all that we have done. And these are really the themes, the complicated themes. On the one hand, it's a day of coronation. It's a day of proclaiming Hashem King, a day of yearning that everyone should proclaim you as king. We want your kingship to be throughout the entire universe. On the other hand, it's a day of awe and trepidation. It's a day of judgment. The king is the king. The king sits in judgment. What's forgotten today? Nothing. You see everything. You know our minds. You know our thought processes. You know our mission. Everything is decided today. It's a day of awe and yearning. It's a day when we're like the angels. We literally proclaim you like the angels do. And we have the same ability to do so just like the angels. And it's a day in which Hashem says, and when you're done doing all of that, go home and celebrate. Go home and have a meal. It's not Yom Kippur. It's not a fast. This is a day to have a festive meal. It's a chag. You coronated to me today? Celebrate that. Celebrate the coronation. Celebrate with faith that you'll have a good judgment and enjoy. You make a feast, and we have that opportunity to do so because, like the angels, we can proclaim you are the Melech, and we do so from our human aspect. We're going to celebrate the way humans do. Let's eat. Let's enjoy. Let's make it into a yontiv. And all of this is wrapped up into this day. All of those different themes, ideas, emotions that we go through, the excitement of coronating him like an angel, the fear and trepidation of being judged, the celebration of we did it, we did coronate, and we enjoyed with a festive meal. All of that wrapped up. We zoomed through. Zoomed through, get it? As much of the Machzor as we can, just highlighting a few lines here and there so that when we say them over Yontiv, a little bit more of familiarity, meaning to it. And again, the more time we spend, as we're doing tonight, getting ready for Yontiv, the more we're ready to go into the Yontiv and really express all that we need to do. Such a pleasure spending time with you tonight. I wish you all a wonderful, happy, healthy Yontiv, coronating Hashem together, whether in shul inside, whether in shul outside, whether in your own homes, but tuzam and all together to do the same thing as we say Hashem Melech, Hashem Malach, Hashem Yimloch, Li'olam Va'ed, together. It should be a good judgment for all of us, and in good health we'll celebrate together in Yushalayim as our shul all moves Mirtza Hashem. By next year, Rosh Hashanah, we'll be together to proclaim Hashem Yimloch from Yimloch Hashem Li'olam, from Elokayach Tzion, from the hills of Tzion, that will declare you king. So a good Yontif to all, such a pleasure spending time. I'll take you off mute, and I wish you all a good Yontif and a good night.
Thank you so much.